You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
You will find Matt Sullivan on both Basketball Illuminati and where you find him now. He has written about Steph Curry, and I mean, it's the most interesting thing I've read about Steph Curry. Usually, I find most of the writing around him and his personality to be pretty glancing, and I think Matt caught him over five interviews for Rolling Stone in a period of his life where he's grabbing his power, his adulthood, his voice, and he is deciding what he wants to make of his life around basketball and how he wants to use the platform. I don't know if you've read a lot of interesting things about Steph Curry, but I thought this was the most illuminating profile on him I've read.
Yeah, it's definitely strayed the farthest from the basketball court. It's a lot of what you said, just mentioned, him understanding who he is and what he can accomplish by virtue of who he is.
Matt, what do you feel like you learned, and thank you for joining us, that most surprised you?
That Steph is more contemplative, more almost dark than you would get from his kind of joyous Under Armour persona. He is in therapy, which he was going on and on and on about, because he does feel the pressure of these expectations to be this golden child. And I think, you know, we made a deal when we signed him up for this story that there had to be real talk. You know, there'd been so much ink spilled on this guy over the years, profiles on profiles on profiles. So we made it a requirement that he'd have to talk politics, mental health, real life shit. And then, you know, I went and talked to like 25 people in his orbit, friends, family, entourage, teammates, coaches, and asked them to, you know, spill the tea. And so I kind of asked them what they would ask him. And in many cases, you know, asked for stories that hadn't been out there. And we kind of had a deal. You know, I won't use this unless I check with Steph first and ask him for the full story. And, you know, Steph didn't say no to anything. He answered every question. So it was pretty unvarnished, at least for him. And he's pretty calculating about that varnish.
What do you mean deal? How does this work? You get the cover of Rolling Stone if?
You know, usually musicians give us a ton of time. And I think Steph just didn't have a ton of time this summer. The day after the Warriors won the championship this year, the editor-in-chief of Rolling Stone, you know, emailed me and said, we'd love to do a cover story on Steph, focusing on his activism. How can we go about getting him? And you know, approached his PR people, and they were excited about some of the off-the-court projects he's launching and philanthropy and whatnot. And we were like, you know, give us what you got. And we ended up getting, I think, like 3 hours, maybe stretched into five. And, you know, we're like, we're not going to do this if it's another puff piece. We're not going to do this if it's another boring profile. We're going to do this the Rolling Stone way. And And I think he bought in from the jump.
You said almost dark. Why almost dark?
I think I caught him maybe in a period where his head was spinning a little. He'd been on vacation and then with kids and then with family. And I think he's starting to see the end, right? And when you're on the mountaintop, there's nowhere else to look but down. And during the pandemic, he took a hard look at himself, a hard look at his entourage, which he kind of switched up and started to lay some track for his legacy, for his money, for his family. And I think he's starting to see the end here, even though he's totally in denial that he's, you know, in anything but his prime.
What did you regard as the strongest opinions he had on stuff?
I would say abortion. I mean, it was a wishy-washy opinion, but I was really surprised that he wanted to go there on such a, you know, hot topic. I was asking him about his endorsement of Joe Biden at the 2020 Democratic Convention, and I was like, that's a really bold move. Your wife was telling me that she was a little trepidatious because you got your cute kids on camera for all the Trumpian trolls to come after you. And he's like, yeah, it was great, except I wasn't sure because of abortion and stuff like that. And, you know, he's this mega religious dude. And I think he has to reconcile that for his religious fans and his non-religious fans and not be seen as like too God-fearing, but he is. And so it was interesting. Like, he'd been thinking about abortion. His mom had told him that she'd almost had an abortion with him, that she did have one with what would have been an older sibling. And I think he's trying to figure out like how liberal he is versus how much of a, you know, sweet Southern Bible Belt Christian boy he is. So I found that a difficult and yet fascinating topic to broach with him kind of across the political spectrum.
You have spent time with athletes. You know where the arrested development resides. You know how you can sculpt a singular skill to the lopsided detriment of all sorts of other things in your personality. How much of an adult were you encountering? How much of a changed person were you encountering, or a different person were you encountering than the one you thought you had an idea about?
One interesting part is I kind of opened with him by giving him a copy of my prized possession, Bill Russell's autobiography, memoir. Russell just died, and we were talking about how the first time he'd spent with Bill Russell, he was kind of this kid, and they talked basketball, and he didn't even realize all the kind of civil rights activism that Russell had done back in the day. And now that's kind of all he wanted to talk about. And so I think he's looking a lot more off the court. But I think what changed about him is like he realizes this power. He doesn't just have it and focus on basketball. He realizes that while every word he's saying to me will be, you know, listened to, he knows that. And we'll get to his throwing shade at Stephen A. In a second. But he realizes that he can wield that power for good. And I think that was more mature, but also more calculated. And he is so meticulous in sculpting this image that, you know, in confronting his past, it also became clear to me that he cared about looking at his future. And, you know, we even did a poll on like how popular he is. And we found that Americans like Steph more than both Trump and Biden. They love him as much as LeBron. And most of the remaining, I think it was like 8%, who either still hate or dislike this kind of God-fearing, do-gooding, you know, golden boy, are basically old white dudes who are both fans of football and the fake billionaire real estate mogul from hell. But, you know, I think he wants to maintain that popularity. And I don't know if he's willing to stretch himself more than in conversation with me, you know, in real life with people who look up to him so much. And I think that's a deep internal struggle, is how far to go versus how to maintain that popularity.
Where is he with the activism?
I would say he's one foot in, one foot out. He's done some great behind the scenes work, you know, showing up at gun prevention, some, you know, clinics in East Oakland with Steve Kerr and Clay, and I found it interesting that Draymond didn't show up to that one. He's also marched in the streets for George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, low-key in 2020. But flash forward to now, you got an election year and someone we can all agree upon in divided times. And he said he's up for going on the campaign trail in the middle of the season. I don't know if he's actually going to do that. I talked to Stacey Abrams, who's counseled him and LeBron on some of their more political maneuvering. And she's like, yeah, we'd love to have him out on the trail. And I'm like, so are you going to? And she's like, well, he's kind of busy. And so I'm not sure if we've gotten very far. Steph said we haven't gotten very far since the strike in the bubble by the Bucks and everyone, which, you know, kind of led to a little bit of change and like a social justice coalition and some promises from ownership. But Steph, I think, realizes that, you know, he said the league is pretty united on some of this stuff, but it takes guys of my caliber, LeBron's caliber, to kind of circle the wagons and really go for it. I just don't know if that's lip service or not. He hasn't had a lot of time to do the activism.
Where is he with Under Armour?
So this is complicated. And I think you kind of have to understand the history in that Steph left Nike for Under Armour for like $4 million a year. I think it was 2013 before he became a megastar. And within a couple of years, he won a championship and Under Armour was suddenly worth, I think he was estimated to be worth $14 billion to Under Armour. And he knew that. He knew he mattered to them and to Kevin Plank, the founder and then CEO, who, you know, has this kind of myth of founding Under Armour out of his car when, in fact, he was selling it out of his grandmother's $31 million mansion in Georgetown. And I think Steph appreciated that kind of underrated underdog vibe from when he was an under-recruited prospect. And that's his whole kind of theme of his brand is underrated. And yet he began to feel like he was underrated by Under Armour. And so Plank, from what I understand, Kevin Plank, this then CEO, was personally involved and involving himself in the design process to put these gigantic screaming Under Armour logos, a UA on these kind of much maligned shoes for looking like dad shoes, when Steph wanted his name, his imprimatur, to be the big deal. And I think that led to a lot of tension. The kind of notorious episode where Plank comes out and said Trump is an asset to this country, or his business mindset is an asset to this country. And Steph shot back saying, I believe with that if you remove the E and the T. And so that didn't go over well. They had, you know, they both told me that they had a difficult conversation that day, that Steph knew the questions were going to come at him. But Steph remains pissed about that. And he got really pissed that he wasn't getting the resources he deserved for what became a like $200 million a year in revenue personal brand. And so they had this big come to Jesus meeting where he was going to leave. He was going to leave. It was like an or else situation. They gave him the resources he deserved, or he felt like he deserved. And now here we are when he's negotiating a lifetime deal, which, you know, him and his people acknowledge that he's trying to get about as much as LeBron has with his Nike lifetime deal, which is like 30, 31 million. You multiply that out across a lifetime of a healthy person, that's more than $1 billion. And so, you know, he knows he's going to get this deal. He's leveraging that to as much of Under Armour's resources and focus as he can get. But there's nothing stopping him from walking away when his contract runs out in 2024 if he doesn't get what he wants. So he has a tremendous amount of leverage, and I think this underdog company is finally respecting that.
What did you mention about Stephen A? What was the shade related to Stephen A?
I think it was. It was like at the end of a drive we were taking. I have it pulled up here along with a couple other things that got lost on the chopping block. He said, if one of the talking heads says something about either me or my family or something that's personal to me, I'm not the one that's going to go to Twitter and defending that or my position. Now, just for backstory, he had gone after his wife. Stephen A. had said that LeBron's wife is hotter than Ayesha Curry, and it was kind of this messy situation. But Steph said, I'm very self-confident, and what I'm doing is how I'm doing. Whatever you say, either I know you're getting paid to say it and disrespect doesn't bother me, you're a clown, and he kind of looked at me and smiled and said, or it's something that I don't want to waste my breath on. That's my position. That's not everybody's position. So I was like, are you talking about KD going after people on Twitter? Are you talking about Stephen A? And he kind of just, you know, said, this is why it's the new media, and, you know, Draymond's running the show, I don't think he said not ESPN, but we acknowledge that there was what I called a screaming industrial complex on ESPN, even though they're leveraging a lot of that for ratings for his talent. And he's fully aware of that, and yet he's hosting the ESPYs after a bit of deliberation.
What else was on the cutting room floor that hurt you to not put in the piece? Because the piece is comprehensive. I urge you all to check it out because it is illuminating, and I imagine a lot of stuff got left that couldn't make it.
Let's see what else I got here. On LeBron versus Jordan, he started saying, we were talking about LeBron, and he said, he's arguably the greatest. And then Steph corrected himself, cut himself off, and he said, one of the greatest. Mm. He said, Jordan, to me, is obviously the greatest basketball player ever to play the game. He's a big Jordan head and respects Jordan's business acumen and I think strives to it. He said, you know, he thinks he can, his brand can be, have much, as much influence as Jordan. And there's an interesting thing about how LeBron's,
is he right about that? He's not right about that, is he? There's no way for Steph Curry's brand to rival Jordan's, is there?
I think he was saying that Jordan's, I don't know, Amin probably knows a lot about this too, but the Jordan's didn't take off until later in Jordan's career, and the shoes certainly remain a big deal. But I think he thinks that now that he's got this stranglehold on his personal brand and better designs, that he can rise to that level with his shoes and his legacy and his smile, which Jordan certainly didn't have the smile part.
Yeah, I think he's banking on his wholesome family friendly charisma, the fact that you know, Aisha is a brand of her own, and they can kind of couple that and lift it up higher to than what Jordan represents, which is kind of athletic excellence, and that's about it.
Yeah, but Jordan didn't make dad shoes.
Right, like the cultural currency of Jordans is absolutely astounding.
Right.
Like they're,
look, I'm not agreeing with him. I'm saying, I mean,
the cultural
see what he
currency
means
of Steph Curry shoes is almost nil. And
well, no, okay, so here's the funny thing. So in 2015, so the year before the dad shoe came out, that first Curry shoe that came, that was the best-selling basketball shoe in the country. It was better than everything else. Every single little youth team in America had those shoes. And I think that's why a lot of the frustration about what happened with that Curry 2s was it being derailed from a clear trajectory of this was going to be the shoe of the people in a way that the other kind of signature shoes couldn't be.
Aren't Kyrie's sort of a bit of the shoes of the people?
Yeah.
Because they have a lower price point?
Yep.
I mean, what did you find?
And the kids internationally, yeah.
What did you find most interesting about Matt's piece?
That Steph Curry has a temper. He's got the story in there about Steph. Well, Matt, you could tell it better about the guy that was in the circle and then they felt like he was taking advantage of some stuff.
Yeah. I'm not supposed to name names, but there were one or two folks in his very much inner circle who he felt had betrayed his trust, were his words. Some other folks thought they had taken advantage of him financially. And Steph had this very intense meeting outside his house. You know, voices were raised and they broke off. And that was kind of the end of that relationship. And Steph stormed into his house, kicked a basketball into his door. His family tried to kind of console him. And he said he broke down crying and went and sat in a room by himself, angry and sad. And he said, you know, they didn't know what to do, they being his family, because I'm not alone that often. And I think you got this sense of the lonely, angry, frustrated superstar / businessman who, you know, his teammates call it Wardell mode, right? His given name on the court when he's got kind of that turn away swagger. I asked people if they'd ever seen Stephen Curry mad off the court, and there wasn't a lot of that, but it does come out every once in a while for sure.
What would you say are the telling details for those who haven't seen the piece, Matt? Just, you do so much reporting on these, and you spent, it was 5 different interviews with Steph in different locations. When you think of the details that are illuminating about who this person is that were in your story, that were gathered through the reporting, what are the details that jump out at you, the writer?
Other than that, he got an email from Obama after Steph suggested that the moon landing might be fake, and Obama said he needed to do better and do something about it and getting inside their relationship. I think there's a way that he's got these kind of low-key support of controversial things, right? Like Kaepernick, he very much was privately messaging, privately supporting, donating to his causes, And I think there's an interesting quote. He said, you know, all the ways they want to nitpick what Collins done from the time he kneeled to now, you can't tell me there hasn't been progress and change and a renewed sense of accountability among athletes. You know, which side of the fence are you on? Are you doing something or not? And I think he wants to do the work. And I think those details were great. His at-home life is super intense. You know, I love this idea that he's waking up at dawn, working on his college thesis, making breakfast for the kids, dropping them off at school, going to practice, coming back. This is like in the middle of the playoffs. He's breaking out the arts and crafts to make a Mother's Day gift. And then at the same time, he'll sit around on July 4th when there was this shooting in Highland Park, Illinois at the parade. And he's just sitting there sunken and frustrated that we're having the same conversation, that he can't do anything about it. And that he's depressed like the rest of us. Right. And he said, you know, I can't do anything about this. And so they just didn't celebrate America that day. They ate lasagna and went to bed early. And I thought it was interesting that Steph Curry thinks about the Warriors Arena, the Chase Center, becoming the site of a mass shooting. He's like, I think about that all the time. So he's clearly just this kind of like heady dude, even at home, even especially at home.
Matt, appreciate the work, the writing, and the piece, and the time. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Matt. Now, I was telling Sasha, Malia, Michelle, you know, the moon landing is an important event that happened. We can't get away with figures who have a reach and a platform to cast doubt and insecurity towards science. Now, Mitch McConnell doesn't want that. He wants you to doubt the moon landing. He wants you to doubt that we Plymouth Rock landed on us. He wants you to doubt everything.
Hey, it's Mike, and I know you were hoping for an update on those fishtail ponds in my backyard. Well, have I got news for you. I actually got lighting installed, and I can change it with an app. Beautiful fishtail ponds lit up red, depending on my mood. If my hockey team wins, we light those suckers red. Anyways, I like being outside. I like looking at those fishtail ponds. You love hearing about it. But what's in my hand other than my app changing the lighting? A Miller Lite is in my hand. That's right, because I know when a Miller Lite is in my hand, I make a good time, Miller time. I take that first sip, I know immediately I made the right call. Nothing goes with my fishtail ponds quite like a Miller Lite. It makes everything so much better. And I'm going to have some people over. I'm going to toss them that beautiful white can. They're going to say, heck yeah. And they're going to have that first sip and know, just like me, that they made the right call. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Don Levitard.
If I'm at the house with them and they're all rooting, I could just be like, yeah, rah, rah, rah. Go Yankees.
Stugats.
Do you know how unsettling it would be if I attended a live sporting event and someone behind me was just going, rah, 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 Browns, rah, Heat, rah, rah, rah.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugats.
I mean, you're just imagining the Queen now, wee bowling.
Full of shit. Bullshit. Bullshit. That's what they're trying to claim now. Now all the stories are coming out. Oh, she's actually pretty nice at 2K also. Like, no, get out of here.
She was nice at 2K also. There's a story. I don't know who it was. I sent it to you. It was like the New York Post or something. Yeah. Saying that she had like a gold-plated Nintendo Wii.
Well, no, they said she enjoyed playing Wii.
Yeah.
And so then they heard and they sent her a gold-plated one, but they had to send it back because, like, security measures don't allow, like, unsolicited gifts from randos to get to the Queen, which I felt like was a bullshit. Like, you guys could have checked it out.
I didn't read the whole... Well, I guess we shouldn't ask how things get past, like, royal security, because there was that whole Princess Diana interview where, like, they snuck someone in to do that whole thing, right?
Is that how it works?
Someone snuck into Buckingham Palace once, too, while the Queen was asleep.
Creep?
I didn't read the whole story that I sent you. I just saw the thing where it was like, the queen begged the grandchildren to play with them because she was fascinated by the idea of wee bowling.
No, the worst was they called her a natural. I said, get out of here, man.
That's actually the one thing about the royal family that I think they've had the right idea with. They never see their kids. They're like, we'll hang out for like an hour on Christmas. Otherwise, go off with the other kids somewhere else in a different wing of the palace.
Neither do the Bradys.
What are we doing?
Oh, I just say, Dan always says like, Giselle's here raising the kids. I'm like, I feel like she's got some hired help.
We reached our Brady Giselle quota for the day, I think. All right,
back to the queen. She's not playing Wii. No chance. This is all the stuff they're trying to humanize her with, like, after the fact.
You don't have her playing, like, DDR or something like that?
I mean, come on.
Mario Kart.
I mean, if you can't have a go at Wii bowling, any human on Earth can have a go at Wii bowling. Mm-mm. It's the best.
No.
Meh. Show up, you kind of tilt your thing, got to make sure you get your arm motion right. It's absolutely fantastic.
What? The soundtrack, though.
Oh, great music.
What's your favorite Wii game?
I recently, with the Nintendo Switch, I had to go at Wii Soccer. And that was a legitimate workout. I was exhausted by the end of that. Like,
Jessica was really laughing at you doing those squats in that stadium. I loved it.
It was so funny.
You get a great deal of enjoyment from Whittingham just generally saying things and making a fool of himself.
No, that's not true. It was just his execution was flawless. The time lapse was a great choice. I didn't have to sit through like a 20-minute video. And then him showing up at the end being sweaty was legitimately a laugh out loud moment.
So I went all the way up, which I was told, by the way, great advice, but I should have gone from
down,
the top to the bottom.
Right.
Because I'm not only am I sitting in every seat, I'm also climbing.
Gravity.
So that was dumb. But then when I get to the end, I'm absolutely drenched in sweat. I got to come all the way back down, and then I have to go all the way back up again because that's where the booth that I work out of is. And so I record that little selfie video of me. I walk in and I see like my boss, and boss is like, "Why are you so sweaty?" And I'm like, "Cause I just sat in every seat in that section." He's like, "What?" Yeah. And then I did the whole rundown of sitting in every seat in the section four times yesterday, and like everyone is like, "What? What? Why?
Are you questioning what kind of shape you're in after some of these things you've done?" Billy's got a theory here. It's a ridiculous theory, but I'd like to hear more about it. I'd like to hear it elaborated on because he believes that a certain swath of people...
I'll take it from here, Dan. This is what I think. And I was thinking about this today. I think the NFL season is harder on the media's bodies than it is on NFL players' bodies.
Go on.
Well, because I was thinking about it. They are top professional athletes, correct?
Yes.
And if they're traveling to play, they're traveling. They have great hotels.
Right.
They have first-class flights. They have private. They have all of that stuff, right? China. They don't have to worry about all that. Obviously, some of them will be sore from getting hit and whatnot, but there's lots of players that you're just kind of standing on the sideline.
Backup quarterback.
Exactly.
Wearing a hat.
Yeah. And they're also, for the most part, very young. Their bodies have the energy that the media bodies do not have. Mm. The media bodies are not flying in these great flights. The media bodies are not staying in these lavish hotels.
Or the private chefs, Billy.
Exactly right. The media bodies don't have these, well, some, but not all have these nutritionists that give them all the best things for their bodies. There's times that you're just eating bad. It's up late. It's up early. Editing. There's
a lot of drinking.
Just everything. Drinking, you know, other things. Just stuff going on or you're not taking care of yourself. I was walking down the stairs today because I couldn't.
Missing kids' birthdays.
Yeah, missing kids' birthdays. I was going down the stairs today just from our pee-pee garage over there. And like, my body was so sore. And I was like, well, what is it? And I'm like, it's week one. Like, it's week, I just know it's week one. My body's feeling it. Like, this is when it hits, because when you're going through it, the adrenaline takes you through, right? But this is like day three of week one. I mean, I guess if you count Thursday, this is what, day six then of week one? But I was thinking Sunday, like, this is like day three. This is really when it hits. The adrenaline has stopped now, and I'm grinding, and it's just week one.
Really, I get eye strain.
See?
At the beginning of the season from watching so many sports. Last night there was the WNBA Finals game started at 9. I could barely keep my eyes open. They hurt so bad.
I thought you weren't doing any post 9 p.m. sporting events of any kind.
I watched like a little bit of it and then I just passed out.
Yeah.
The eyes were hurting.
The thing is this, Dan, they don't cater to our schedule. We have to cater to their schedule. We have to see the games when they're on and live our lives around that schedule. There's nothing that we can do about it. We just have to do that. You know, and not just your eye twitch or whatever it is that you said. You have face blindness earlier this week. Like, it's just a lot going on.
Jessica, you're too young. It was earlier in the show, though it feels like earlier this week, that we discussed face blindness.
I've lost all concept of time, and it's just
week
one.
This is just because the useless sound montage dungeon just skews you, makes you sore. You had a meeting?
What happened in the meeting?
TBD. Lots of my meetings end with TBDs. And Jessica, it's like, oh, we'll work on that. It's like, okay.
You are too young to be complaining about starting times of sporting events at 9 p.m. This was never a problem for me when I was young, and I didn't have any time
start as late.
For the complaints
it's gotten
of
worse.
Old people.
Dan, it's gotten worse. I will stand by this. It just has gotten, the time's gotten later. And this started when I was in college because I went from Central Time to the Eastern Time Zone for the first time. And as soon as I hit that 18 years old, I'm living in South Carolina. The games are starting at 8 now. Oh my God, it hit me like a ton of bricks. This time zone sucks. I hate it.
Does.
Jess, do not think that your eye strain could be also born out of the fact that you're watching NFL football while online shopping and on TikTok?
Whoa. No. I don't think that they're
not related at all.
Yeah.
No, you don't think looking at a screen every second of every day it hurts at all with maybe your eyesight just a little bit?
I think it's just because it's late. Yeah. Mm.
Guillermo, put it on the poll, please, at Lebatard Show. Is 27 years old too young to be complaining about 9 p.m. game starts?
No, 27 is like retirement age for some of these athletes, Dan. Yeah. Like, that's what we're talking about. And so we are well past that. And we're expected to keep up at this pace. I don't know how we're going to do it.
Who are you thinking of specifically getting a battering during football season? Is it like Peter King or something? Like what? Who is it that you're getting battered because this is too much? Football is too much. I don't even know what your theory is exactly.
But by the way, I hate to disagree so vociferously, but you're very wrong about this.
What?
Football is the easiest sport to cover.
Oh,
what?
Gosh.
It's the easiest. There's 18 weeks. Amin, you used to travel all the way across the country.
I still do.
But like 5 times a week, you're traveling. You're getting on a plane. You're getting off a plane. You're checking into a different hotel. You don't know what city you're in. Covering the NFL seems like a pretty cush gig, I have to be honest.
It does depend on what age you are, though, because this is a conversation I've had with Stugatz a number of times recently, and it ends with me yelling, Stugatz, you're 50, as he limps out of a room thinking he's 24 while taking flights to dead shows all over the place. And he doesn't realize that he's not taking care of his body at all while he flies all over the place. And he comes in here and he needs an epidural for his back pain.
Oh, man. Speaking of back pain, is Genesis coming this week?
I've been wondering the same thing.
Oh, man. There's a lot of people complaining, Dan. A lot of people complaining, saying, man, we need a Genesis day because there are some bad backs in this studio. And I'm not going to point fingers, but, you know, it feels like the work environment here is very conducive to back injuries. Sitting in chairs.
And TMJ.
I don't know what that
means. We all have it. Yeah, everyone in this room has it.
Yeah. What's in TMJ?
Where you clench your jaw, grind your teeth. Everyone in this room has it. Me and Tony have it.
I'd like to not learn about more things that I could have, if that's possible, please. Because, like, now I'm going to go on a whole thing, like, the other night, or like a couple days ago, Gojo put up a thing about like some mouth guard that he has, and then I started looking it up, and I was like, oh, this is for like teeth grinding, and I'm like, man, I wonder if I need one of those.
I'm getting that done at the dentist. The dentist has been making one of those. Yeah, because it'll affect your sleep if you're grinding your teeth.
Are you grinding
your teeth?
Yeah.
It smooths out the top of your teeth.
That's what I'm saying.
Crack a tooth.
Football season's all about grinding, and I can't. We're weak in.
You mentioned earlier in the show that you're sleeping 4 and 4.5 hours a night. That is deeply unhealthy.
I mean, like, I've done this for, like, years at this point. So I don't, it's not like I wake up tired. Like, oh, my God, I still need sleep. I wake up and I'm ready to go, which is why the coffee the other day was probably the worst thing I could have done, because I'm already high energy. To add on to that was just adding gasoline to a fire, Dan.
So you're high energy at 4.5 hours of sleep with no picker-uppers, no caffeine,
nothing.
Fair play. It's sort of like people who like marathon running. If you like it, congratulations.
Well, I don't like it. Like, I wish I could sleep in, but I just can't.
Well, have you tried breath work? Have you tried meditation? Have you tried any of the things that would help you? Or are you just like, can't sleep right, not going to look at anything, not going to take any herbal medicines, not going to do melatonin, not going to do anything?
I don't want to take any substances because I feel like then that can become habit forming. So that's off the table.
Even if it's herbal, even if it's organic, if it's not Ambien, it's just...
What about like tea, like Tilo? Have a little Tilo before bed.
Don't like hot drinks. Not really? A big fan of hot drinks.
Huh. CBD. We got to get him some of the CBD that we have around here as a sleep aid to see if we can get Amin to sleep a little bit deeper.
That reminded me of an article that I saw in the New York Times about how iced coffee is now like the new trend, that no one drinks hot coffee anymore.
New trend.
People are drinking iced coffee year round. Like it used to just be like,
summertime.
You know, summertime, everyone would have an iced coffee, or like cold brew became really popular a few years ago. And this doesn't apply to us because it's always
hot. I was going to say, we all agree on that.
But I'm saying, like, when I lived in New York or Chicago or wherever, I would drink iced coffee in the winter too, even though I'd be freezing because I just preferred it. And now it seems like that's become like a legitimate trend. And like different places have seen that iced coffee intake doesn't decrease as much in the winter.
We talked about this earlier today, and I am telling you that every single time, and this happens a lot because of all the Starbucks that are out there, that I walk past a Starbucks that is teeming like an Apple store, I say to myself, $7, $6, $8 for a cup of beans. Why did I not have this idea?
I think you're making your coffee wrong.
Why do I not have the idea to create a Starbucks that has become an addiction throughout everywhere, where it's one brand above all others that you are recognizing as a coffee brand for the masses? There's no second brand here. There, you can do Juice and Java and all the others, but there's no, whatever is second place is a distant second to the brand of Starbucks.
And the offshoots as well, because Starbucks is so big that now your local coffee shop is a huge, you know, thing amongst the coffee purists. You want to go to your local place, get locally sourced beans. Also,
Whole Foods, really? Give me the Colombian beans, okay?
There you go.
Not to steal an idea from another major podcast company, but Crooked Media, the Pod Save America people, they've started selling their own brand of coffee, and every time they come on at the beginning, they're like, hey, we're out of stock for the next month. We're crushing it with this coffee. Dude. Like they sell coffee more than they sell podcast ads.
Let me tell you right now.
We can start our own brand of coffee.
Oh, let me tell you right now.
I will start a tequila brand. Before I'm done here,
really?
I will start a tequila brand, yes.
Like The Rock?
I will start a tequila that I like. I will start that.
Like Cranston?
You want to work on a scotch with me? Process on that? Because like, this isn't like Stugatz is like, oh, I'm going to open a weed store,
I have started the process.
What's
I've made
called?
The investment. I've started the process. I don't have a name yet.
You want to let your friends in on this?
No.
Maybe we can be early investors?
Let's workshop some names.
Come on.
Let's workshop some names. Fat Face.
No. It's all about the bottle, Dan. Have they told you that in the process?
Yes.
You gotta make it a cool looking bottle.
Gordo.
I could be a chief bottle designer if you want.
Gordito. Wait, is that already?
I think we get the theme.
According to the New York Times, in the dead of winter, cold drinks account for 60% of Starbucks beverage sales. Is the hot cup of Joe on the way out?
No.
I say it is.
Do you guys not have the same reaction I do, though, to Starbucks? It's not just the coffee. And even by inflation prices, what? This muffin, this piece of bread costs what? Like, you guys are stealing money with how much you're overcharging for all of these things.
I feel like the little bakeries charge way more, though.
They do.
Like,
because
a hot cup of coffee at Starbucks is still, like, I don't know, $2-ish dollars, maybe?
No, $2?
Just for a black hot coffee.
I don't know. I don't drink
still
coffee.
Cheaper to make it at home. I have my own like little coffee set up at home because it's way less expensive than going out every day. But I think at Starbucks, they still like are pretty competitive price-wise. There's some, like, if you go to the bakery downstairs,
you
Dan,
think
$8 you for think, a coffee.
You think that the Starbucks stale stuff that's in there, all of it that looks like crap that's been in there and is and seems like museum pieces, you think that's reasonably priced?
I haven't ordered anything from Starbucks in years because I'm allergic to everything there, but I'm guessing it's probably a little bit cheaper than if you get like a nice muffin from a place in Miami that's like a little bakery.
It's cheaper, but I'm surprised that they don't try harder. Why don't they have the best bagels? Like, to, like, go there and get, like, a bagel sandwich.
They don't need to try hard.
No, but they... But
the whole purpose of Starbucks, though, is that it's, like, mass consumption. But, like, they're able to replicate it in every city and have the same consistent thing. Like, it's every chain restaurant, right? Like, you don't go to Chili's because you're like, I'm going to eat the best baby back ribs. You go there because it's consistently the same in any city, and you're familiar with it.
It's the McDonald's formula, right? Like, I know what a Big Mac tastes like, regardless of whether I get it in Cincinnati or in Miami, right? But... And this is the same thing with the coffee. The other thing was when Howard Schultz founded it, his thing was all like, well, people will want a gourmet coffee, right? People, because before people were paying a quarter at like the bodega and just get that in that blue cup and with the little white top on and that's it. So he was kind of saying people are going to want more, which was kind of insane. But then you say that, but there was also Caribou Coffee. Remember Caribou Coffee?
Oh, yeah. I went to one recently in Chapel Hill. It still exists? The only coffee place in town.
Guys, Dan's starting a tequila company. Yeah, why are we talking about Starbucks? Yeah, how do we get, like, what does $2,000 investment get me? Yeah. What percentage? Yeah. Like 20%? What are we talking here? I want to get in on the ground floor.
So do I.
Sweat equity is what I want. I don't want to actually put any money down because it fails. I don't want to, like, my money be out of
Amin will be our taster.
Oh, there you go.
Why would we want him as our taster?
Because if I give it the thumbs up, everyone knows, wow, like, this is a high-quality
beverage. You had coffee this week and had a reaction to coffee. I've never seen anyone have a reaction to coffee. I don't trust your judgment in any realm. Why would I trust it here?
Wait, hold on. Because I had a bad reaction to coffee, all of a sudden, all my expertise at consuming alcohol is out the window?
Your taste is something that is up for debate.
If any of our remotes have taught us anything, it's that Amin is great at consuming alcohol, Dan.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, think about all the times we've got the Mas Miami events and all that stuff.
Cleveland. I mean, we couldn't do anything with any of that footage because of how great Amin was at consuming alcohol.
Well, that wasn't connected to the alcohol. That was connected to some other complications of which I will not name.
Oh, boy.
Well, that's good. That's good audio.
Yes, it is.
No, it's good for you guys to say why the audience didn't get the content from the All-Star game in Cleveland.
Why stop at a tequila? Just open your own distillery. Well, let's go. Let's go. Let's do whiskey. Let's go.
Let's stay focused.
Yeah.
I am focused. I'm focused on branching out. Let's go.
Make something that Roy wants, Dan.
Yeah.
How is it that any topic I bring up, you guys are just like, where's mine?
No, we're trying to... I was offering you money. I was trying to give you money.
Something to look into, though.
I offered my sweat equity.
Yeah, sweat equity.
Where does this come from where I don't have good taste?
Judgment.
Oh, that kind of taste. Sorry. I thought you meant like actual taste. I'm like, no, I'm great.
I'm great at tasting
at
things.
Tasting things. I have
Show
a great sense of smell.
The decorations in your home. And we'll,
I'm sorry,
we'll
what?
We'll decide on how good your taste is.
My what?
The decorations in your home.
I don't have decorations in my home.
Tasteful furniture, though?
Spartan. Nothing on the wall?
Just an underwear drawer.
three sections. It's immaculate, though.
What do you mean you don't have decorations in your house? You don't have things on the walls?
No.
I got my first decorations of pumpkin season yesterday. Billy, it has been pumpkin season. I got a little pillow that says something about pumpkin spice. It's like pumpkin spice gives me life, but it's a skeleton drinking a little orange cup. And then I got these little mini pumpkins, and then I got a pumpkin candle, and then I got these little like fuzzy things that I hung under my TV.
All right, so we know who doesn't have
dish
taste.
Towels.
Oh,
they say
no. Sweater
weather with little doggies on them. And then a little jack-o'-lantern towels for my bathroom.
I thought pumpkin season was October. I would have assumed that was October.
Please. Pumpkin season's 1 month. You're going to relegate pumpkins to 1 month of the year?
That thing started in August, dude. It starts in August.
I'm sorry, Roy, to have offended your pumpkin sensibilities.
Oh. I mean, it's pumpkin beer time, man.
Oh, God, Jesus. You're one of those.
Hell yeah,
I am.
Roy.
I am.
What's wrong with you people? Next thing I know, everyone's going to start talking about missing the leaves, changing colors, and that kind of crap.
We live in Florida.
Everyone misses that. That's the best time of the year.
No, it's not. You know what the best time of the year is? This time. All the time.
Yeah,
every day.
Yeah, because the leaves are starting to change.
No. The time where it's not cold and there's no reminder that winter is coming. That was my Game of Thrones voice.
Thanks, Rob Stark.
Rob.
What do you mean, you people?
What do you mean, you people?
Hey, it's Mike, and I know you were hoping for an update on those fishtail ponds in my backyard. Well, have I got news for you. I actually got lighting installed, and I can change it with an app. Beautiful fishtail ponds lit up red, depending on my mood. If my hockey team wins, we light those suckers red. Anyways, I like being outside. I like looking at those fishtail ponds. You love hearing about it. But what's in my hand other than my app changing the lighting? A Miller Lite is in my hand. That's right, because I know when a Miller Lite is in my hand, I make a good time, Miller time. I take that first sip, I know immediately I made the right call. Nothing goes with my fishtail ponds quite like a Miller Lite. It makes everything so much better. And I'm going to have some people over. I'm going to toss them that beautiful white can. They're going to say, heck yeah. And they're going to have that first sip and know, just like me, that they made the right call. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces.